This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Just a couple of weeks ago, Anthropic, which is like an OpenAI competitor, their startup lab, actually founded by former OpenAI employees. So they probably know what goes on inside of OpenAI, how they're training their models. So a real fierce competitor there. They actually eclipsed GPT-4 only just a couple of weeks ago with their latest model, sort of Claude 3 Opus, it was called. Sort of the internet went crazy. This is just better than GPT-4 at everything. So OpenAI had to respond to that.
The EU's AI Act. We've talked about it a lot in the media, and we tend to focus on what it is banning or what it won't allow, high risk, medium risk, low risk. Is there anything interesting about it from your point of view as somebody who works in AI? Like, might it help developers here? Might it stop developers here? Is what would you say about it?
So the first thing is, I think that what the right thing they've done is they've prohibited certain types of AI applications. Mm. So they've just said stuff that includes systems that manipulate behavior through subliminal techniques, exploit vulnerabilities, engage in social scoring, real-time biometric identification, those kind of things are just flat out banned.
So basically, the way China uses it, we're not allowed to use it.
And the way, exactly. So they're just flat out saying you can't do that. And I'd imagine if it's not already in the law, they'll say, look, you can't voice clone people.
Hello and you're welcome to The Big Tech Show with me, Adrian Weckler. Now, what's going on with artificial intelligence? Has EU legislation helped in any way? Might it hinder it in any way? And what in general do we need to know about how the technology is progressing? Well, Connor Kelly, head of growth at Human Loop, who was in with us before to give us an ABC explainer on what's what, is back. Connor, you're very welcome back to the podcast.
Great to be on, Adrian. Thanks for having me on.
Just before we get into it, Human Loop, just give me the 10-second explanation of what Human Loop does.
So Human Loop is a enterprise platform for developing and evaluating large language model applications. We sit in between the large language model, whether it's OpenAI, Anthropic, Google, and the end enterprise application. And we allow enterprises to come in, tweak whatever model they want, get it to perform whatever task it is, monitor it over time, evaluate its performance, and ensure that they're building top performance AI applications for their companies.
Okay, you managed to get 25 seconds out of that 10 seconds, but that's absolutely fine. Right, let's talk about artificial intelligence. Yeah. ChatGPT-4.
Yeah, so ChatGPT-4, so they released a new model, GPT-4. Well, they've updated the model. Yeah. It's still GPT-4, right? Which means, and it's interesting that they only updated the model and didn't rename it, because GPT-5 is probably going to be something that's even more interesting, right? Like, so it's probably going to be bigger hives. But essentially, what's sort of happening here is they released a version of GPT-4 in March, and then they released a new version in September, and they've released a more modern version now. And each time it's gotten better and better and better. But what's happened in between is competitors have caught up each time. So just a couple of weeks ago, Anthropic, which is sort of like the closest, which is like an OpenAI competitor, their startup lab, actually founded by former OpenAI employees. So they probably know some like what goes on inside OpenAI, how they're training their models. So a real fierce competitor there. They actually eclipsed GPT-4 only just a couple of weeks ago with their latest model, sort of Claude 3 Opus, it was called. And sort of the internet went crazy. This is just better than GPT-4 at everything. So OpenAI had to respond to that. And they brought out just an updated version of GPT-4, which now eclipses that. And just so you know, the way this is actually measured is called the Chatbot Arena. It's on the leaderboard. Are you familiar with it? So essentially the way this works is it's crowdsourced. So a bunch of people get on, they get random models. They're interacting with different models. They're asking questions. You might get GPT-4, you might get Claude Opus, and you just rank which model was better. And essentially they crowdsource those scores and see which one is performing the best.
And to the layperson, what is better about GPT-4? Other than the actual technical metrics that are measured, how might we discern that OpenAI has retaken the lead?
Right. So the beauty of the Chatbot Arena leaderboard precisely is that it's measured on intelligence. It's basically fluency, ability to answer questions. Can it help you? So the difference actually is that it's just more intelligent.
Yep.
And then if you actually look at the metrics, it gets a bit hairy, because some models are really good in certain things, but not great in other things, which just means that they might not be as useful.
So you've got OpenAI, you've got Anthropic, you've got Google Gemini.
Yeah.
Which has had its own issues, by the way, recently.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So Google's been an interesting one because they've kind of been playing catch up this whole time and they still haven't caught up. Gemini was meant to be their moment to retake the throne. And as we all know, what happened with Gemini 1.5, it's sort of fallen flat on its face. So they're having a lot of issues at the moment. Now, they have all the advantages. They have huge amounts of data. They have huge resources. They have incredible talent at the company. Now, it's just whether they can get their act together and actually start delivering. So,
where should we think of Elon Musk's Grok AI? I mean, is that just kind of the Dogecoin of AI? Is it a novelty act or is it serious?
So, I work with all sorts of enterprises, all sorts of people, all sorts of developers building with AI. None of them are using Grok. It's never mentioned. Yeah,
it's never mentioned. Yeah. that's fair enough. Yeah. The EU's AI Act, we've talked about a lot in the media, and we tend to focus on what it is banning or what it won't allow, high risk, medium risk, low risk. Is there anything interesting about it from your point of view as somebody who works in AI? Like, might it help developers here? Might it stop developers here? Is what would you say about it?
So there's a couple interesting things. So the first thing is I think that what the right thing they've done is they prohibited certain types of AI applications. Mm. So they just said stuff like stuff that includes systems that manipulate behavior through subliminal techniques, exploit vulnerabilities, engage in social scoring, real-time biometric identification, those kind of things are just flat out banned.
So basically, the way China uses it, we're not allowed to use it.
Yeah, yeah, and the way, exactly. So they're just flat out saying you can't do that. And I'd imagine if it's not already in the law, they'll say, look, you can't voice clone people, you can't do deepfakes, all those kind of things.
So then from a company or a developer point of view, maybe that makes it easier insofar as you know what the guardrails are. Right, I'm not going to waste time doing that.
Yes, exactly right. So they said, look, don't even try it. It's just flat out illegal. So that's good. Then they've sort of went downstream from that. They said, okay, these are high risk systems, which are ones in critical sectors like healthcare, education, and employment, where there's a significant impact on people's safety or fundamental rights.
Yeah.
So these ones are going to be affected by the regulation. So
do you know what's a weird one there is workplace in HR and recruitment. So one of the applications that it is widely reported to have been restricted by the EU's AI Act is in assessing CVs and how companies, recruitment companies and recruiters assess CVs. And I just don't know how that's going to work in the real... So it, in plain English, what it seems like is that you cannot use more and more advanced AI to super filter through CVs. You can to a low level, but not to the level where you're starting to discriminate and looking for signals that might, get into issues like lifestyle or maybe, things like preferences. And I don't know how that's going to work, where the fault lines are going to be there. It's an interesting one.
Yeah, that's a very interesting one. And I think that would be sort of a hairy one to get into because in reality, going through CVs is still a very biased process when it's done by humans, right? So when you automate that by AI, arguably it could be less biased.
You're making it systemic.
Yeah, you're making it systemic and you're almost dehumanizing the process and stuff like that. So yeah, there's going to be a lot of questions like that.
There's going to be a few gray areas like that. Let's talk for one second about OpenAI. There's been a few interesting bits and a few court cases ongoing there. And there was a very interesting standoff in the last few weeks where Google's YouTube essentially said that it believed that OpenAI was sucking in data for its own models. And we know that OpenAI is currently facing lawsuits from New York Times, from comedians like Sarah Silverman, who are able to show specific examples where things are basically just lifted or almost lifted from their work. How do we think about that in terms of a company like OpenAI and big LLMs? Is it unavoidable that that's going to happen, or are they just going to have to pay up, do you think?
This one's going to get argued out in the courts, of course. I'd imagine Google are really going to push to protect that data as much as possible because at the end of the day, that's their moat. Yeah, exactly. And why wouldn't they? They don't want OpenAI. That's their number one competitor. So whatever way it gets argued in the courts, but I'd imagine going forward,
there'll be a licensing agreement or something like that.
And you've seen these license agreements are starting to pop up now. Google did a deal with Reddit actually to pay for their data in real time, I think like $60 million a year. So that's a whole new revenue stream for a company like Reddit. And actually, when you start to think about like this, like when you start to think about it this way, it might get rid of the need for advertising revenue in some areas. When if your application is generating enough interesting data, you might just get an AI company saying, hey, we're just going to pay you an ongoing fee for that data. Just keep giving it to us.
Yeah. Artistically, it's kind of an interesting one as well, because I don't know any band or singer or writer who has not extensively borrowed, if not outright stolen, styles, vibes, themes, you know, composition techniques from others.
Yeah.
And here you have something that's doing it synthetically, maybe no more literally than the humans would, but there's clearly going to be a difference here. Maybe it's a question of scale. Maybe it's because you can just push a button and it happens, rather than if I go and study the works of, you know, I don't know, you know, I think of a great writer, and if I go and read all of their books and then I create a book in that stuff, at least I have to go and read all the books first.
Yeah.
And it takes me a long time.
Yeah.
So maybe there's a kind of a quantitative or a scale issue there. What about the idea that AI is starting to be focused in the hands of a small number of giant corporations? Like we've mentioned three of them,
right.
Anthropic, Google, OpenAI, which kind of is half Microsoft, or Microsoft has a huge investment in it. And we see even in Europe, for example, that Microsoft made an investment in a French company there called Mistral, which is itself worth a couple of billion dollars. So it's like when you talk about AI and generative AI, which is what we're talking about at the moment, you're kind of talking about the majority, you know, interests going to really three companies.
Yeah. So it's interesting you brought up Mistral, because they're actually an open source company. So that everything they release just gets open source. They give it away for free. It is really interesting how this one's going to unfold. So Google, OpenAI, Microsoft, and those guys have the distribution, right? Apple, these guys have the distribution. They're going to be huge. They're going to profit massively from AI, no matter who generates the models, whatever. They're the people who are going to be serving it to enterprises. They're going to be serving it to end users' applications, those kind of things. So yes, it is getting increasingly, it's getting put in the hands of a small few. However, the technology is quite democratic in the sense that a lot of open source models are coming out all the time that are as good as state of the art just 6 months ago. Okay, so the best model you could get 6 months ago, like just GPT-4, for instance, models are now coming online that are open source. You could just download them. You can have full control over them, that are as good as that. So it's sort of a tale of two halves. So you're going to have big tech dominating for sure. That's going to happen, absolutely. However, like, you will have smaller companies accessing these technologies, coming up with startups and generating their own things. I think ultimately data will be the big moat. Data will be, whoever has access to the data will have the advantage, and that's going to continue to be big tech.
So it is going to be the big tech.
Yeah.
And what about the idea that AI will be more intelligent than any single human being next year, which is another of Elon Musk's predictions. Now, he tends to be a doomsayer when it comes to AI. But is that, I've seen some debate about that. I haven't seen many people backing up his view on it, though.
Well, look, in my opinion, GPT-4 is smarter than any person I've ever met.
Really?
Well, yeah, like, you know, how many people can just, like, you know, rattle off code the second? It depends. It depends on
how you define smart,
exactly.
Maybe, because,
yeah.
So it does depend on how you define smart. Like, is intelligence a function of being able to do something quickly at automation? Is it something that can derive patterns? Or is it something that can react in the moment, in context, spontaneously, accurately, and never be absolutely wrong? So to be right or wrong, what I mean is, even if it's a misjudged response from a human, it's still something that is judged according to the context, whereas there's no AI that can really do that.
Yeah, well, I suppose it really does come down to the definition, and we've failed to define what intelligence is to this point. I don't think we're going to figure it out in the next year. Mm. So I don't like. I think this open-ended AI is going to be smarter than one single person by a certain date. Like, I just think we're never going to get there because we're never going to agree what intelligence
what smart
actually is.
I
like personally would say, look. Intelligent, like I said, okay, GPT-4 is smarter than any person I've ever met. That's sort of just, I'm just playing a game there, right? But like, in reality, intelligence is something to do with like how well you can learn and adapt, like the speed at which you can learn and adapt and survive. It's along those lines. Mm. If you think from on an evolutionary path, okay, your ability to quickly adapt is tightly linked to intelligence, which then has allowed like species to flourish or whatever. Mm. I would imagine, like on that metric, we're not really there. Like these AI models aren't like quickly adapting to anything. They need to be like trained to do something first, and that's a whole process. And then, yes, they can adapt within that context.
Yeah, because we've had supercomputers that can beat chess grandmasters for 25 years or 30 years. Now, by that metric, you could say that computers exceeded human intelligence.
Yeah.
By that metric.
Yeah.
And yet I'm not sure that anybody would really claim that to be, to be an absolute proof.
The lines are getting blurry, but I think we're never quite going to get to that point where we say, hey, it is more intelligent than humans, because we're just going to keep redefining intelligence. But the lines are certainly getting more and more blurry. You know, it's no longer just being good at chess. It's being good at everything.
Where are we now generally in terms of the doomsday clock with AI? I mean, 2 years ago, AI, the entire conversation was about Terminator robots. and thankfully, that's petered out a bit. It's still there, but it has kind of regained its rightful perch or niche in terms of one of 20 things that we need to be concerned about. Where are you on that?
I'm not a typical doomsdayer. I don't think these systems have any inherent intelligence, quite frankly. Like, I just think they're just like really, really complex models. They don't have any ambitions. They don't have any motives to try to take over the world. So I'm not like counting down. I'm not looking at the doomsday clock personally. When you look at where things can get dangerous, it's more in the malicious use cases. It's more in like cybersecurity. People like malicious people getting their hands on AI and using it for something that's already illegal. I don't think it's going to be AI itself doing that. Mm. And in that sense, I think we're like already there. We're already in that like risk territory. Yeah. I don't know if you heard those stories where like people were cloning voices and then making fake calls to their parent, the person's parents, saying that they need money and those kind of things. We're going to see stuff like that emerging. We're going to see far more complicated cybersecurity attacks, you know, that are like run by AI models, whatever.
And weaponry, maybe. I mean, we're in the middle of a lot of different conflicts at the moment. And I remember writing, God, it was 10 years ago, about emerging drones on the battlefield and how there was an ethical debate going on as to how much autonomy you should give those drones to make their own decisions effectively based on vectors and visual signals that they were getting on the battlefield. Now, you put that into today's drones. That debate is still ongoing, by the way. With the weaponry, you know, more and more powerful and more countries getting access to that, that could have, if not doomsday, you're getting closer to real significant mass damage there.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, for sure. Like, it's going to be weaponized like any other technology has been in the past.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be in my opinion, it's not the actual AI that's going to come alive and do the damage. It'll be humans using it to do that.
Humans using it. Okay. So before I leave you, what else are you excited about in the AI field at the moment? What do you think is going to, what are the themes you think we're going to be looking at over the next year?
So what I'm really excited about, and where I still think, like, this is where things really have to go, is just the ability for models to take actions. So at the moment, we've been locked into this chat interface where you have the general purpose intelligence, but the only way to access it is to go in and talk to it and stuff like that. So it's like, think of it like a brain. The brain needs arms and legs. It needs to be attached to more tools so that it can perform more tasks. And companies are doing this. And if like it's like slightly more technical feature of like GPT-4 is it has JSON mode. I don't know if you're, which is like, that's designed so that it can, when you give it a command, it can output a task, essentially. It can go do something, and it will always do something every time you ask it to do. Those little things like that, I think, are going to be huge unlocks. Because at the moment, people are like, yeah, AI is great. It's really smart. It's really impressive. But what can it do for me? And now it's up to developers to actually sort of piece that puzzle together and say, hey, you know, if you give it access to this set of tools and you put it in this application, it can actually be really useful. So I think that's where we're at now, and we're going to see more and more useful applications of AI. That's personally what I'm most excited about, because I actually think that's where most of the opportunity is for developers, entrepreneurs, and businesses, is to actually start giving tools to these models to perform these actions. But I'm sure, like, that this year is good. Like, the big leaps this year are not so much going to be, hey, GPT-5 is like so much better than GPT-4. It's going to be, hey, like, this version of an AI can do so much more than GPT-4. You're no longer bound to just chatting to it in an interface. It can now actually go manage your life, can like perform tasks on the internet, those kind of things. So that'll be big this year.
Okay, cool. Well, Connor Kelly, Head of Growth at Human Loop, thank you very much again for coming in and giving us a really good explainer of what's going on in the moment. Rory Bones was on sound and JJ Clark produced this podcast. I'm Adrian Weckler, and you've been listening to The Big Tech Show. We'll talk to you soon.